You are up.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Dove, and I represent Terry A. Running, the trustee appellant in this matter. And Ms. Running is in the courtroom sitting at counsel table. The issue before the court here today is really pretty straightforward. The facts have all been stipulated to. And the issue is whether or not the subject annuity is a qualified annuity under the unambiguous, clear language of 26 U.S.C. 408B. Notwithstanding the bankruptcy court's attempt to cast a metaphysical spell on this annuity, the facts remain the same. It is a single premium, it is a fixed premium, and as a result of those qualities and those criteria, it fails to meet the statutory criteria and mandate of 408B2A and 408B2B. This is a non-qualified immunity.
So you're saying basically that this is not a tax-exempt annuity?
That is correct. Whether or not it's subject under the Internal Revenue Code of Section 72, as some of, you know, we cite into our brief, there may be some issues about the taxability of that. But as it relates to the exemptability under 408B, it is not.
Isn't it really the same issue? I mean, the IRS doesn't seem to have a problem with it, or they haven't expressed any problem with it. And if it's tax exempt, isn't it qualified for bankruptcy exemption purposes?
Your Honor, I don't believe so, because Section 72 is not cited in 522. The exemption statute, okay? What is cited in there is in order for it to be a qualified exemption, it has to meet the criteria of 408B, which we acknowledge three out of the four criteria are met in this case. It's the issue with it being a fixed single premium case and that it does not have annual payments as required under the statute, that removes it from the exemptability. Everyone stipulates that it's a single annuity premium contract. There isn't any dispute about that,
right? And it would have been an exempt IRA if he had just kept it in the IRA.
Yes. Yep. We acknowledge that.
Correct. The fact that there's not an annual premium, why does that matter?
I think there's two things that we have to look at for that. First is the exact language of the statute that says it cannot be a fixed premium.
And that says the annual premium will not exceed the dollar amount in effect under 219, which it doesn't if there's no annual premium, right?
But it can't be a fixed premium.
Okay, and the fixed premium, there was one payment that was made at the time that the thing was purchased, and basically the debtor just dumped his IRA into this and purchased whatever annuity that got him. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, I don't know the intent of why the debtor switched it from his IRA individual retirement account into an annuity.
But he emptied the IRA bucket into the annuity bucket and said, whatever that benefit derives me, I'll sign up for.
Exactly. And it's our position that in dumping it into this exact bucket, it does not necessarily and does not meet the criteria of 408B.
But so your position, I just want to make sure I understand.
Sure.
Your position would be that exempt IRA can never be converted to an annuity and retain its exemption.
No, I don't believe that's true. If there would have been an annuity account set up and established and qualified under 408B, if Mr. Miller would have had an annuity and been making annual contributions,
okay,
I think,
but if he were making annual contributions, that wouldn't have been an IRA rollover.
Right, but you still could have rolled over your IRA into the annuity.
So if he had rolled over his IRA into the annuity and said, I'm going to continue contributing to this in an amount that's not fixed, then you would say that's okay.
I would say that meets the criteria of the statute, which says it cannot be a fixed premium. It has to have annual compensation.
What if he were 80 years old when he converted the IRA over and he were drawing out of the annuity? It wouldn't make any sense for him to continue making contributions. Would it be the same thing?
So, well, what if there are no premiums? I mean, the 408B refers to a retirement annuity contract that has premiums which are not fixed, but this one doesn't have any premiums, right?
Well, it did have a premium. It had the purchase payment,
well,
$267,000. And the contract specifically prohibited under Exhibit B on page 10 or on page 4 that there could not be any further payments made under this contract.
This was an odd premium. It wasn't in the sense that he went to a broker and said, I want $400 a month for the rest of my life. What's the premium going to be? He said, here's a bunch of money. What benefit do I get? So the premium was the IRA.
The individual retirement account or the individual retirement annuity?
Account.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he had an individual retirement account. I mean, he chose to remove it from that protection and deposit it and do whatever it is. I mean, this is no different than if you put it into any other type of an annuity, and now he's trying to stretch this into an individual retirement annuity and claim that it's exempt, yet the statutory criteria, 408B, is not met with respect to that fixed premium. And I think the case law, the three cases that we cite, although there are factual distinguishments, I acknowledge that, each of those three cases we cite say that in this type of a situation, a fixed single premium is not eligible under 408B.
But none of them, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any of them involve a rollover from an exempt.
Absolutely. No, you are absolutely correct, Your Honor.
They were basically someone trying to use an inheritance or other assets to shelter them.
Sure, one was an inheritance,
right.
One was
right.
A gift that had been done. They sold some personal property and you know, had tried to put those into that area.
They all
that
went
is correct.
From non-exempt into exempt, or what
correct.
They thought was exempt. Here, the distinction is exempt to exempt, or what he thought was exempt.
Correct, and I think the key there is that what they thought was exempt, but it didn't meet the criteria. And again, if you look at the endorsement policies and the language contained within here, no one is making a representation that this is exempt. The insurance company who wrote this covers it both ways. They say, this is assignable, except if it's not. And if this is this, well, then it's that. There's no continuity. There's no representation at this point that it is an exempt annuity. And I think further to further your question, as far as the distinction regarding the rollover of monies from one thing to another, if this person would have had $100,000 of just cash in his bank account and established this, I don't think it makes any difference. The statute doesn't say, you know, you can't have a single fixed premium except if it's in the case of a rollover. If the government or Congress would have wanted to have that provision to allow for a rollover of an IRA into an individual retirement annuity that did not require that type of, they could have waived that, but they chose not to. And the bankruptcy court's decision, when it goes on to say that this is irrational, that it doesn't make any sense, well, who knows? I mean, at 10 hours ago, they did a lot of irrational things, in my opinion. But, you know, the point is Congress has set it up for this perspective. It's not within the bankruptcy court's purview to say, I'm going to ignore what the statute says. It says it can't be a fixed single premium because, and Judge Kishlow's opinion was, because this was previously exempt property. And I can't imagine Congress have intended such a result.
You would agree that whenever there's a single premium, it's fixed.
Exactly.
Well, is this a premium or was it just the purchase price of the annuity? The annuity refers to it as an initial income payment. It doesn't say it's a premium.
Well, then certainly it's not exempt under 408B if they didn't even qualify it as a premium. You have to have at least meet some type of exemption status under 408B.
Well, I guess that gets to whether you have to have premiums in order to qualify.
Well, and I think, you know, if we look at the Internal Revenue Publication 590 and we look at page 9, individual retirement annuity must meet all the following criteria. There must be flexible premiums so that if your compensation changes, your payment can also change. I don't know how much more clear we can get than what the IRS has said through its publication 590. There have to be these flexible premium payments in order for it to qualify. I also think when we look at the cases and we
in a close call that exemptions to be liberally construed helps the debtor in this case?
If there was a factual question, I would say so, yes. For example, 522-0, Addison versus Seaver, I had the opportunity to lose that up on the Eighth Circuit. You know, there, it was a factual determination as far as the intent of the party at the time that transfer was made. We don't have any factual disputes, any factual balancing of the harms. This is a straight, you know, here are the facts. We're going to apply it to the statute as it exists. So in answer to your, you know, while the, you know, our circuit certainly says we deem, you know, exemptions to be liberally construed, I don't think we can rewrite a statute and put something into a statute which isn't there.
The round peg doesn't fit, in your opinion.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Have you reserved time for rebuttal?
I have.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Olive.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning.
Counsel. I represent Joseph Miller, the debtor and the appellee in this matter. And we have obviously made all our arguments in our appellee brief that we're going to present this morning, so I'm going to keep my remarks relatively short. I think Mr. Dove narrowed the issue. The court's very aware of the issue, listening to the questions posed to Mr. Dove, and it really falls on this premium distinction, the definition of a fixed premium, and what it all means. The IRC code provision just cited by Mr. Dove, I think, proves our position on this matter. They refer to the reason for flexible annuities to make certain that contributions to these annuities stay within the footprint of what is allowed to be deducted and treated as non-taxable income. Here, this issue doesn't even apply. As everyone stipulated, this is an IRA rollover. There's no question it was properly taken care of in terms of income contributions prior into the IRA. The IRA was documented that it went straight into the annuity. The issue is this definition and concept of a fixed premium, as the statute says under 408. And I submit, as I argued in my brief, that by definition, any payment into an annuity is always going to be a fixed premium. I mean, that's just the definition of an annuity. And so that creates on its face a kind of, congressional irrationality, especially today, the day of the government shutdown, I suppose, is kind of overkill. But it creates an absurdity interpreting the statute that way, because it would essentially make any annuity that I can think of, and maybe I'm limited in my thoughts, as being non-exempt and non-qualifying under the code. And so when the statute has an absurdity, the courts have to look at it and create and make it fit with what, make it into something of what Congress intended. And what Congress intended by the fixed premium is clear from the Internal Revenue Code provisions, the other provisions of the code, to limit contributions into these annuities to what is qualifies under the income requirements stated in the Internal Revenue Code. Here we have that. It's fully complied. It goes into the annuity, and it fully is within this footprint of what Congress intended, what the Internal Revenue Code has interpreted that intent to be, and what Judge Kissel interpreted it to be. Any other result, as I said, makes the whole statute a nullity. No annuity would be exempt. No annuity would tax qualify under the Internal Revenue Code. There wouldn't be any reason for the statute whatsoever. I can certainly look at this and understand the reason, and the Internal Revenue Code even stated it in the provisions cited in my brief as to the rationale between limiting and saying you can't have fixed premiums, in the sense that people can only contribute what's limited to in their income. So we're beating a dead horse on that. I think it really turns
So Mr. Dove's position, as I understand it, is that once this money was dumped in, if the debtor had agreed to make a paltry contribution based on a percentage of his income every year, then somehow it would have been okay.
Yeah, I heard that. And I think that's kind of a silly way to interpret this, in the sense that he could, I mean, even though this contract would be limited in the sense that you couldn't add to the contract because the insurance company is going to change their payout on the back end, if he wanted, and he was working at the time of filing, if he wanted to contribute and buy into an IRA annuity, he could go right to the entity, he could buy additional contracts. A premium is always fixed when the payment is made. I mean, whenever you buy an annuity, the payment is fixed, so it's always going to be fixed. I understand the argument, but I think if he, what he's saying is if in the insurance contract it had just left open future contributions, that somehow that would have made this exempt, and without language to that effect, it's not exempt, and I don't see how that would really make a difference here.
The focus is on annual as well as premium. There wasn't an annual premium here.
Correct. Yeah. There was an upfront purchase of the annuity from the already exempt funds that we've directly traced. It already qualified under all of the income restrictions based on that. I mean, there's a, and you know, that being said, like I said, we're kind of beating a dead horse.
Are there any cases with this situation involving a rollover that you found?
Not into an annuity where there's, I checked the tax court, I could find no tax court decisions where the IRS challenged these things, and I could find no bankruptcy court decisions where it
that's
was.
That's funny, because we looked for non-bankruptcy cases, couldn't find anything that was quite on point.
And that was my first reaction, is that, you know, gee, this is a context where it would more likely be challenged by the IRS with its larger resources, looking for more revenue, and I didn't find any.
There are no revenue rulings challenging these sorts of...
None that I was able to locate, and I don't want to put words in Mr. Dove's mouth, but I assume if there were any, he would have found it also.
Well, what about not only any rulings challenging the rollovers, but just any rulings authorizing a rollover of an IRA into a individual retirement annuity?
None that I was able to find that anyone asked for a ruling on that was published. I mean, there might have been some unpublished ones, but I wasn't able to locate them.
Fun issue.
Yeah.
It is. It's an interesting issue. I noticed, you know, in the appellant's brief, they also made a couple other arguments that I'll address really quickly. One of the arguments that I addressed in my brief was that the trustee argued that the IRA agreement didn't provide for a penalty on early withdrawal and so forth. My only point there is that it's not up to the plan administrator or the life insurance company to impose tax penalties. It's up to the IRS, and if this was improper and they pulled it out early, the IRS would impose penalties at the time of the assessment, which is the time of the submission of the tax return. So I don't think that either helps us one way or the other. I think it's entirely up to the IRS on there, and the contract does say that applicable penalties would apply. They're not going to contract that out. I really don't have much further. I just wanted to address the fixed premium issue. That's what I covered in the appellee briefs. That seems to be the essential issue in the case, and therefore I'm going to let Mr. Dove do his rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olive.
Mr. Dove, looks like you have just under 5 minutes.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments. First of all, it's not unusual for people to take exempt property and convert it to non-exempt property. That happens all the time. You get people are stressed out or getting close to bankruptcy. They take it. They need it to live on. That's not an unusual circumstance from that perspective.
But the isn't the theory behind Section 408 somewhat similar to the theory behind individual retirement accounts? The IRS wants to limit the amount of money that can be shielded from taxation. But is that theory applied here, where we go from exempt to exempt?
If he would have rolled his exempt IRAs into a lake home, we wouldn't be arguing the factor.
Of course not.
So, I mean, but the point is, it did not meet those criteria. So, I mean, it's...
I mean, it all goes back, in your view, to the words of the statute.
Exactly. And I think that's what the courts are confined to do and to, you know, to look at. The one question or one point that came up is that was talked about is Judge Kishel did not say that this qualified because it was a single fixed premium. In his decision, he stated that he found it to be acceptable because it was a rollover of other funds. And in my opinion, in the case law opinion, how do you get that? I don't see a Romanet number 4 down there underneath there to say this is one of those exceptions from that perspective. And I also found it interesting that no one has found, or at least to date, a whole heck of a lot of legal precedent on this type of process. And I'd offer to the court that the reason is the statutory language is pretty clear. If you have a single fixed premium annuity, it doesn't qualify. Why do you need to argue it?
Well, you've been around the bankruptcy court for a while. How many people have an IRA into an annuity? That's very uncommon.
Yes.
Maybe it's just uncommon occurrence, not because the statute is so clear. Maybe it just doesn't occur.
Right. And then the three instances...
debtors have that much money?
Yes. No, you're correct. But in the three instances that we did find, obviously all three of the courts, and I did not find any... I certainly would have disclosed it if there was a case contrary, and I presume, you know, the bankruptcy court would have found it too, to the contrary, that said if it was a single fixed premium annuity, that it qualified. There is nothing there with respect to that. So I guess in summing it up, we believe the statute is clear on its face. We believe that the bankruptcy court erred when it issued you its opinion by making a separate caveat because this was a rollover, for lack of a better words, and that just because it was a rollover of at one time exempt funds does not mean, because it does not meet the statutory criteria, and that it was because it was a fixed single premium, that it is no longer exempt and the exemption should be denied.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.